You are listening to the Passion City Church podcast. To learn more about Passion City Church, including our gathering times in Atlanta and Washington, D.C., visit us online at PassionCityChurch.com. Today's talk comes from Pastor Louis Giglio.
We want to be bright and we want to reach the world. I preached for Dr. Charles Stanley last Sunday. That's why Brad was preaching here last week at the Five, crushing it. Grant was preaching at Cumberland. I was invited to preach for Charles Stanley. If you don't know him, he's a legendary, maybe the legendary pastor of our generation, still preaching at First Baptist Church Atlanta. I recommend that you go sometime just to see what longevity looks like and what faithfulness looks like. It's his 87th birthday last Sunday celebration. 87. And they asked me to come and to preach. Next Sunday, they're celebrating his 50th anniversary at First Baptist Church. One thing that will not happen for me at Passion City Church, sadly, unless I live to be over 100 years old, and I don't see that in the cards. And so, but amazing time. And I showed this picture that I want to show you because I wanted to tell a story about Dr. Stanley. So we dug this thing up, and some of you have seen it because Andy has preached a message about this photo a few times before, and I've shown it here a time or two. But this is circa 1976-ish, if anybody was alive back then. And on the left is yours truly. And on the right is probably the best known pastor in our city, Andy Stanley. Here we are, high school senior summer. Was anybody alive in the 70s that can bear witness to the fact that this all actually happened? This was a thing. Long story short, and I'll try to make it as short as possible, we're going on vacation with Andy's family to St. Augustine, Florida. We would go and camp because his dad was really into camping. So they had a travel trailer. His dad pulled it behind the car. We'd go places, set up the camper, the trailer, whatever, and stay for a week. And we're on our way to St. Augustine, Florida, and we're so excited. And Andy and I have decided that the highlight of this trip is going to be we are going to catch a shark. We had never even been shark fishing before, but that didn't slow us down. And Andy's from Florida, had Florida in his story. He knew more about shark fishing than me, so he came up with the plan, and that's why he could tell this story a lot better than me. But we concocted this thing. You might have seen it in the photograph. You saw the rope and the inner tube down in between us. I don't know where he got it. You'd say, well, we just go Google how to catch a shark, you know, but it was 1976. Google that. So I don't know where he gets this idea, but he says, we're going to make a homemade shark-catching contraption. And I'm like, I'm all in. So down in his basement, we made this thing. It had heavy rope that we were going to tie to the pier, a big, huge truck tire inner tube that was going to be our make-the-shark-tired thing. Then we had a couple hundred feet of quarter-inch nylon rope that went out from that, and then about an eight-foot-long leader, which is a little metal thing that goes to the hooks that go in the shark's mouth, hopefully, that he can't break through the metal leader. And then we had three giant hooks down the leader. So this was our plan. We made it in the basement, and I said, what are we going to fish with? He says, I heard that a cow heart is the best shark bait. And I'm like, yeah. So we went out and killed a cow out in a pasture and ripped the heart out of it. It was fascinating and amazing. You're like, I don't like where this is going. I don't like the idea of a cow heart being used as shark bait. You were eating the cow that we got the heart from. Your cheeseburger was the cow. The heart just happened to be at the butcher. So we go to St. Augustine, we go to the butcher shop, and we say, we need a cow heart. You got any cow hearts? I love that just in and of itself. And the guy comes out and says, yeah, how many do you need? And I'm like, how many do you have? So we get these cow hearts, we go to the pier, and we slice the cow heart up and put it on the three huge hooks on our eight-foot-long metal leader at the end of our rope attached to the inner tube tied to the pier. When we get to the pier, we feel like we are going to conquer the world. There are already a lot of fishermen on the pier because dusk is coming. They have these very expensive rods and reels, huge reels and these thick rods, and they're all out there casting and have their rods stuck in the rod holders, and it's all professional. They got their tackle boxes and their bait buckets, and you can just tell this is a serious fisherman's club. And here we come, rope over the shoulder, inner tube in hand, little bit of a, we didn't have a cooler. We had the cow hearts in a paper sack that we'd gotten from the butcher. And here we come, and they're looking at us like, what is up with these guys? And so we're just kind of looking around like, all right, put the cow heart on the hooks. And then we had not thought out several elements of this expedition. One of which was, how do you get the cow heart and the bait out to where the fish are? If you have a rod and reel, you just whip it and whee, there it goes. We got no whip it and we got no whee, there it goes. And so the next thing I know, Andy has got the rope and the leader and the cow hearts over his head like a lasso. And we do have a whee. It's a whee, and there it goes, and it splashes in. And we put our little weights on it, sinks it down to the bottom. Meanwhile, I'm not exaggerating. People are like, are you kidding me? Like, seriously, people are ducking. They're grabbing their rods and reels. People are like, what? Where did you people come from? So we're waiting. As soon as it sinks in, I'm thinking, okay, we're ready. We are seriously ready, like right now, for Jaws to start happening. Nothing. Nothing happens. 30 minutes goes by, and we're like, did you feel anything? I don't feel anything. I don't know. Here, you feel it. You feel it. I don't know. I can't tell. Maybe our bait's not on there anymore, so we pull it in, and sure enough, the cow hearts are still on there. They've just now been brined in a salt water solution for 30 minutes, and they're not looking really appetizing anymore. They're kind of this grayish color, and if I was a shark, I wouldn't have anything to do with it. And so we don't have any other options because we don't have a plan B. So we give it another one of these, excuse us, pardon us, we're not from here. And then we send it out there again, go through that all over again, pull it in, nothing. And by now, we're just like, this isn't going to work. But this guy over here, he's catching real fish. And so I go over there, and he's cleaning, while he's got his lines back out, cleaning the mackerel he just caught. And he's filleting this fish right on the little wooden bench on the pier. And I'm like, okay, that looks more appetizing because the head and the guts and the skeleton, the spine and the tail are all still intact. So he's about to flip it over into the ocean. I'm like, no. Can we have that? Now, he should have thought and said no and thrown it in the ocean. But he said, okay, because you guys look like you are idiots and don't have a clue what you're doing. Have my mackerel guts. And so he gives me that. And a minute later, a guy over here is doing the same thing. So we got three mackerel guts now. And we break the skeletons, we stick the heads on the hooks, there's a little bit of the stuff still all hanging out, and this looks like it's gonna absolutely work. Until we have to get it out there again. And before I know it, Andy has got this thing going. True story. And there is mackerel blood and guts and intestines and things going onto the faces of every person on the pier. He's just swinging this thing around, and everybody's like, you know, goes out there and sinks. And we're like, okay, third time's a charm, right? And I mean, it's maybe like 10 minutes goes by, and I'm starting to get that sinking feeling again, like nothing's happening, when wham, the rope in my hand is like whoosh. Second thing we hadn't planned on was wear gloves when you do this next time. And so nylon cord goes through my hands. I'm like, it's okay. We're going to catch a shark. And I just dropped the rope because, A, my hand's on fire. Our plan works perfectly. The rope goes zipping out into the water. The inner tube stretches. And we're like, oh man, that's going to break. But it doesn't. And then the other rope goes to its full length, and we just see things, action happening. And we're standing there watching like, wow, it's really working. And then nothing happens anymore. We're like, oh, wow, it got off. So we pull the rope back up, and we pull the inner tube back up, and we got several hundred feet of this other cord. And so I just start, you know, winding that up because we got off, right? No, it didn't get off. It's just coming right at the pier. And we're like, well, we had him on for a minute. It's fun while it lasted. Maybe we'll get some more mackerel guts and try again. Then it decided to go back where it came from. And it was like, whoa, hold me, Andy. Finally get that off my arm. Woo, goes out again, inner tube. Wah! This goes on about four times. No, I don't put it on my arm anymore after that. But the other thing goes on back and forth. And finally, the thing's getting tired because our inner tube is brilliant. And we get it up to the pier. And by now, everybody's rods are out of the holders. They've reeled everything in. They got all their stuff laying down. Everybody's on our side of the pier like, man, these are the most brilliant people we've ever seen. This is unbelievable. They're looking down in the water, and finally, this thing's head's kind of popping up a little bit, and it's a 5-foot-long shark is on the end of our line. Yes. And people don't even care that they've got guts and stuff on them. It's just like amazing. Now we hadn't thought through, if you're a legitimate fisherman here and you're tracking along in your mind, we hadn't thought through how to get the 5-foot shark out of the water and all the way up the 40 feet to the pier. So that didn't happen. As soon as we got it 6 feet out of the water, it just snapped one time with no resistance from the ocean, and that wire leader just was done, and that guy looked at us like almost and just took off again. We didn't even bother. We didn't even want another leader. We had a story. We had a legend. We did what we came to do. We conquered. We rolled up our stuff, put our inner tube over our shoulder. We were walking off that pier like we absolutely owned St. Augustine, Florida. And we got back to the travel trailer, and Dr. Stanley was in there, and he was like, so how did it go? We're like, oh, you are not going to believe this. And I mean, we have the guts all over us too, and we're telling the story, and we smell like it really did happen. And he's like, wow, that is incredible. You think we could do it again tomorrow night? And we're like, absolutely, we're doing it again tomorrow night. And so we went back the next night, and Dr. Stanley stayed far away down at the end of the pier, had his camera up on a tripod in the parking lot at the pier, and that's how we came up with that photo. Dr. Stanley's a phenomenal photographer. And you can tell by the look on our faces, if you remember the photo, we caught nothing that night. They did clear out when we came down the pier. They're like, that's the guys I was telling you about. No, that's them right there. No, here, no, that's the guy right there. Watch. It was incredible. And when I was showing that photo, I was telling a story about Dr. Stanley and just about him being human and trying to show people another side of him besides the person that we always see in the pulpit. It just reminded me of that night and the day before and how determined we were that we're gonna get a shark. We had a plan and we are focused on what we're setting out to do. And in the very same breath, Jesus calls these guys to follow him. We call them the disciples, the first human beings who really knew who Jesus was and started following along in his mission on planet Earth. And some of them were fishermen by trade. And what Jesus said in time to them was, you know how to catch fish, but I want to teach you how to catch men. And when he said that, he wasn't objectifying your friends or my friends. He wasn't making this about a tally of who got saved and who didn't get saved, or who came to church or who didn't come to church. What he was saying was there's an entire humanity waiting to know how loved they are by God, how valuable they are to God, how seen they are by the creator of the universe, how much they were made for more than this earth. And I want to teach you how to use your life going after them to share with them what you have learned about me. And this is still the plan all these centuries later, that God doesn't want a church that camps out in buildings. He wants a church that is bright out in the world so that if anybody's looking for the way home, they can find their way home by following you or following me. Not to a building, not to a denomination, not to a church, not a set of rules and regulations, but they can follow us and find a Savior. Find a God who loves them and has a purpose and a plan for their life. And if you take on that mission, I don't have to be right in every circumstance. That's not belittling the fact that Jesus is truth and we want to walk in truth. There's something that is right and true. It's just saying the world isn't waiting for someone to roll in and be right all the time. The world is looking for someone who can be bright so that when they need to know how to get home, they can see light that can lead them to the person that is Jesus. And I just wonder, do you see yourself as that light that God is sending out into the world? Do you see yourself as light that God is sending into the world? When you do, this whole be bright attitude, it comes to life. And I believe that's when the church becomes unstoppable, because we're not waiting for somebody to get through our doors. We know that God is sending us through the world's doors, and he's giving us an opportunity, low pressure opportunity, because you don't have to be right every single time. You just have to be right in a darkened world. Our story is a personal story of a real guy tonight. It comes from Acts chapter 17. And it's the story of the Apostle Paul, one of the first trailblazers of the church. And he ends up in Athens, Greece, a real place. And a lot of you guys have been there. And the part where this story takes place is exactly like it was today, the day it was when Paul was there thousands of years ago. Because a lot of you have gone to Athens, or at least you've seen the Acropolis. And when you walk up to the Acropolis and take that long hike, you pass by the place where this story took place. In fact, there's a plaque right there that says, "This is the place where this story transpired." And so Paul ends up in Athens, Greece. He has a mindset like, I want to be a fisher of men. I want to share what God's done in my life with people around me. And I'll just read the story for us unfolding in verse 16. We're not going to put it on the screen because it's a narrative. It's a true story. And I'm just going to read it right out of the Bible. Sometimes we put it up there so you'll know there's no like magic going on down here where I'm reading something else. But it really is coming right from the text. So just listen, maybe not even following along on your translation. Just listen to what God is telling us tonight. It says, while Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day with those who happened to be there. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to dispute with him. Some of them asked, "What is this babbler trying to say?" Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Then they took him and brought him to a meeting of the Areopagus. And we're going to learn what that is in just a minute. Where they said to him, "May we know what this new teaching is that you're presenting? You're bringing some strange ideas to our ears, and we want to know what they mean. All the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas." Then Paul stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and he said, "Men of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and I looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, to an unknown God. Now what you worship is something unknown, I am going to proclaim to you. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in temples built by hands. And he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything, because he himself gives all men life and breath and everything else. From one man, he made every nation of men that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he determined the time set for them and the exact places where they should live. God did this so that men would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from each of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. Therefore, since we're God's offspring, we should not think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, an image made by man's design and skill. In the past, God overlooked such ignorance, but now he commands all people everywhere to repent, for he has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man he has appointed. He has given proof of this to all men by raising him from the dead. When they heard about the resurrection of the dead, some of them sneered, but others said, "We want to hear you again on this subject." At that, Paul left the council. A few men became followers of Paul and believed. Among them was Dionysius, a member of the Areopagus, also a woman named Damaris, and a number of others. If we put a title on this that we wouldn't use, it would be the day that Dionysius and Damaris put their Jesus, put their light bulb in the Jesus's life wall. The day that Dionysius and Damaris met Jesus. That's what this story is all about. When you reduce it all down, Dionysius and Damaris and some others met Jesus, believed in him, put their faith in who he was. Why? Because Paul was being bright. And when I look how he's being bright and see how he's navigating a situation like this, I go, hey, I've been in situations like this. I want to be in some more situations like this. And when I'm in a situation like this, I want to learn from Paul. So a few of the things I'm learning from Paul about being bright are this. Number one, if you want to be bright, you have to be quick to understand the spiritual landscape or the spiritual climate around you. He showed up in Athens, and the first thing he did was he perceived the spiritual climate. He didn't just show up and go, oh, I'm worried about me or what I'm thinking or where we're going to eat or where we're going to go or what schedule's going to be or look at that or look at this. He walks into Athens and the first thing he does is he surveys the spiritual climate. And when he does, it touches his heart. It says that he was distressed, A, in other words, it really did grieve him, and B, he was grieved because of how many idols they had in the city. He was blown away by how many different idols were there. And I just want to keep upping my skill of walking into situations and yes, meeting people and ordering food in a restaurant and going to this particular thing and seeing that in the natural, but I want to walk into situations and I want to be able to size up the spiritual climate. Do you know what I'm talking about when I say that? So that you don't just hear, oh, hi, I'm so-and-so, and I'm from so-and-so, and now we're just dealing with the facts, but you're kind of trying to suss out with people, like, where are you with the Lord? Where are you in terms of your purpose in life? Where is the climate of this particular place? So we walk into your classroom, into your dorm, into your place of work, and can you kind of break down where everybody is spiritually? Because you had your radar scanning the situation because you knew you were sent there to be light and to be bright. The second thing I love about Paul is he went straight to the synagogue to teach. That was his go-to, by the way. If you don't understand some of the background here, Paul, before he met Jesus, he was a champion Jew. He had all the credentials. So when he showed up at the synagogue, it wasn't like, who are you? He could say, well, I'm a Jew of the Jews, a Pharisee of the Pharisee. I was trained by this teacher of the law. I have this deal and that degree and all of this. And they'd say, oh, great, you teach today. I mean, he was that respected as a Jewish leader before he met Jesus. And so he could walk into the synagogue and just drop it like crazy. So the first thing he'd do when he got to any city was, where are the Jewish people gathered? I'm going to go to the synagogue. I'm going to start at the Old Testament. I'm going to walk through all the stuff they already know. But then I'm going to build a bridge over to how I found the answer to all that in the person of Jesus Christ. So first thing, synagogue. Second thing it says about him is he went to the marketplace day after day and he talked to whoever was in the marketplace. And I'm like, I love this guy. Because he didn't feel like it was an either or. Either you can church talk, talk church with church people, or you can talk marketplace with marketplace people. You can either deal with Christians or you can deal with real people, but you can't do both. He's like, oh no, yeah, you can do both. And you have to do both to be bright. You have to be able to speak church and speak marketplace to be bright. Thank you so much. I don't know who you are and where you are, but amen to you. Thank you for being here tonight and God bless you. That's awesome. Don't you love this idea? Because I think, like, I know so many guys and ladies who are crushing marketplace, But if I'm honest, a lot of them are like, I don't really know all the Bible as good as you do, and I'm not sure I could lead somebody to the Lord if it really came down to that. But man, I know distribution patterns. I know technology. I know market conditions. I'm crushing it over here, and I can hold my own with anybody that's in the marketplace. But I'm not as comfortable over in this world. And I know a lot of people who are real comfortable over here. I mean, all day long is another podcast. It's another soap journey. It's another Bible study. It's what book are you reading right now? And all day long, it's just them and their Christian friends talking about all the things in their Christian world. But then you get them out of that and put them over here with people who don't know any of that. And they're like, yeah, well, okay, yeah. Well, praise the Lord. Yeah, it's wonderful to be here. Hi. And what being bright is all about is being fluent in both places. So if you're a market leader, and that doesn't mean you have to be in commerce. You could be really like 100 feet deep into fashion or whatever it is that you can converse about and hold your own in any environment about. I want to encourage you to up your understanding of the things of God, the Word of God, and even your potential to lead somebody to God. So that you wouldn't make the mistake of some marketplace leaders. Am I talking to anybody here today? Of saying, no, I'm just out here representing light and I'm letting my life show people something different. Well, it may come down to it that you have a friend sitting in your office and you've got an opportunity right now and there's not time for you to invite them to something else. You're going to have to be the one that leads them to Jesus sitting right there in that office. And I want to encourage you to do that. Community group. One of the things we do at community group, every time we gather, yes, you're going to get something to eat free. Yes, you're going to meet people. Big church is going to be made small. It's going to be incredible and phenomenal. The environments are great, but you're going to hear and learn something about who Jesus is. Last week's community group, Grant crushes it on a talk, a small talk, short but powerful about who is Jesus. This week, just a little heads up, you got Brad and Brittany coming on a little teaching that's going to teach us something else about our faith. Why? So that you can walk out of there, especially if you're a market leader, going, I learned a little something else tonight that's making me stronger in my ability to talk the things of God. When the door opens, I'll be ready. And if you're all over here sunk down in the things of God, please don't misunderstand me. That's awesome. I do a soap journey. I'm doing one right now. I'll be up in the morning texting my friend in our soap journey, but also learn about something else, right? Read about something outside that zone. Read about something that isn't all about the Bible study that you're doing right now so that you can cross over into the world and we can speak both church and speak the world at the same time. This will allow us to be bright. I love how we see this a little bit later in the text. It says, when Paul began to speak, this was his message. Men of Athens, I see that in every way you're very religious. So he'd already figured that out. So do you see how he encouraged them and complimented them and sort of won them over, if you will? And if you're not a believer, this is what I want to do if I'm your friend. I want you to not think, well, the church people, all they know is like big theological words and church talk, and they're not real like all the rest of us. I want you to know that there's nothing further from the truth than that. We're all in the same boat here. It's just some of us here met Jesus and found that that meeting was the most powerful thing that happened to us in our lives. Everything else about us getting to that moment and processing life, we're doing that on a human level. But I love how he built the bridge to them and found common ground with them. Most brilliant sermon. Men of Athens, I see that you're very religious people. And they went, yeah, we are. They had over 1,000 idols. Thousands of idols. He's like, man, you guys are killing on the idols, by the way. And they're like, yeah, we are. I noticed you're so amazing in your religious pursuit. You had an idol just in case there was a God you didn't know. You didn't want to offend that God. So you have an idol over here to the unknown God in case there's one out there that you don't know yet. That's called covering your bases. And I'm telling you what, nobody covers their bases like the men of Athens cover their bases. And they're like, can you imagine how good you felt if you were in that council, that leading council that ran the culture and the philosophy and ran basically the town of Athens, the Areopagus Council. Can you imagine if you were the guy that got the idol to the unknown god, how good you would have felt when he said that? I noticed you even had one to the unknown god, and that guy elbows his friend and says, I told you, that's exactly what we needed, was the idol to the unknown god. Preach, brother. I'm with you. Right on. And then he just sees the drawbridge come down, and he goes, man, this is going to be a cakewalk. He says, what you worship that you don't know, I want to tell you about that God. Where do you think they were posture-wise when he got to that point of this talk? They were sitting on the edge of their marble bench. And they were like, did you hear that? He knows who the unknown God is. This is going to be amazing. Okay, go. He said he's the maker of heaven and earth. He's not made by hands. He, in fact, gives life and breath in all things to all people. He decides when people are born. He decides where they'll live. He sets out the course of their life. And he does all this in the hope that they'll seek after the one who put breath in them and find him. Because he's not far from each one of us. Oh, in fact, your poet said it. We are his offspring. See, we're like, well, what does that mean? It's just the most brilliant way to let somebody know that there is common ground between you and them. And I believe this is going to help us be bright. It doesn't mean that you have to know everything about anything, but if you know anything about anything, please use that as a way of letting the world know that there's common ground between those of us who love Jesus and those who haven't yet come to know him. And I don't think that, again, we have to be uber-versed in every single thing going on in culture. But somehow we have to see opportunities. Paul, I don't know how long he'd been carrying this poet's quote. I mean, had he had that tucked away for a while? Or was he just super into poetry? Like, I got the Greek poets down, I got the Roman poets down, I got the Jewish poets down, I got the Stoic poets down, I got the Epicurean poets down. So if I'm in a situation, I need some poets, I just whip out whichever one I need. I don't know how he did that, except led by the Spirit of God and being a brilliant communicator. But he said, and I'll let your own poet make my point. We are his offspring. And then he makes his point. You said, your poet said we're his offspring, right? Yeah. Okay. Well, if we're his offspring, I'm not stone and I'm not gold and I'm not silver. So all those idols that are gold and silver and stone, don't need them. Brilliant. And then he shifts gears and he does what every bright person does. He doesn't skimp on the gospel. And I love that. And I'm learning that from him. That at the end of the day, I need to take a chance. And I need to say, the one who changed my life is Jesus. Not just church. It wasn't just a thing I went to. It wasn't just I'm growing spiritually right now. At some point, I actually have to say, and his name is Jesus. And I know it sounds crazy, but I believe he was raised from the dead. Paul knew that he couldn't tell a story without talking about Jesus, and he couldn't talk about Jesus without talking about the resurrection. But if he talked about the resurrection, all hell was going to break loose. Because the Stoic mind and the Epicurean mind did not believe in resurrection from the dead, and actually they were vehemently opposed to that kind of teaching. And so he's like, we all good here? Unknown God, feeling good? Good, keep preaching. Can I tell you about him? We want to hear about him. Here's who he is. Amazing. Even your poets, boom, wow, this is so good. And then he said, all right, now that we're all in here together, I need to tell you about the resurrection from the dead. And then the whole thing blew up. A lot of them sneered at him, and they're going to sneer at me when I eventually say his name is Jesus, and I believe Jesus is raised from the dead. But I'm not going to skimp on the gospel. You know why? Because I believe what this text says. I believe my neighbors, my family members, the people that I hang around with, the people I see in life, I believe they're closer to Jesus than maybe even they think they are. Because I believe this text, and I believe that in him we live and move and have our being. I've met so many people over the course of my life, and they say, I'm not interested in church. And I'm like, totally, and they're probably right. I'm really not interested in church. But I'm like, yeah, but you might be interested in a God who loves you. I don't care about all that, and I don't believe the Bible. Okay, you may not believe the Bible, but I believe that you might need some peace in your heart. Oh, I left church a long time ago, and I don't plan on going back through those doors anytime soon. I believe that you believe that. But I also believe about you that you may be struggling and you may have tried every single thing that your friends have told you is going to solve your dilemma, but nothing has worked yet. And you still may be a candidate for God to do something supernatural in you to bring peace of mind, wholeness of heart, joy, forgiveness, hope, healing into your life that nothing else has been able to do. Because I believe that in him we live and move and have our being. Do you believe that about the people around you? If you do, you're going to do what that guy did today. You're going to take a chance and invite that person one more time. Because you're going to believe they might be a whole lot closer than even they think they are to seeing a God who loves them and putting their faith in a Jesus who gave his life for them. I want to stay convinced that people are closer than they think they are. And leave the results to God. I know some are going to look back and go, raised from the dead? Jesus? That's happened. Someone's going to look back and go, I'm sorry, we all moved on from that about like 30 years ago. That's happened. No level-headed person or intellect would ever buy into what you're saying. That's happened. But some people are tired and weary and longing for meaning and a purpose. In longing for peace with God and with their past, and who are ready to jump at a chance to be forgiven. Some people have been able to distinguish. I was mad at the church and the people in it. I really was never all that mad at God. The people, they were jerks. But I see that God is still in here, hanging in with me in my story. And so Dionysius, I believe, a leader of the council of the most cultured and the highest philosophical thinking on earth. I'm in. And Damaris, count me in too. I believe in Jesus. And that day they put their bulbs in the Jesus' life wall because Paul didn't skimp on the gospel, and he left the results to God. Is there anybody in your life, A, that you bought the story? They don't want to hear about it. And you went, okay, I'll never, ever, ever talk about it again. Well, if they say, I don't want to hear about it, don't go, well, I don't care if you want to hear about it, you're going to hear about it. And then leave little sticky notes everywhere in their world, tell them about it. That might not be the best plan. But just wait and see if another opportunity comes along. Hang in there and be a normal friend. Be a good friend. See if another opportunity comes along. Let them see your life and watch your life and see if there really is something different about your life and maybe another opportunity will come along. But is there anybody in the building that you sort of bought the line or gave up on the hope or cashed in on the possibility that that friend could actually come to know what you've known? Or are you still out there at the end of the pier saying, I know all this looks a little unorthodox and I'm not the best at it and I'm not a professional, but I just want to keep casting hope out into the water. I just want to keep casting love out into the water, casting truth out into the water. I just want to keep one more time just saying, man, this is changing my life. This has been the defining moment in my life. And I'm just going to hang in there, believing that God is working even if I don't see it. The last thing, and I got to close because the Louis, your finished music's been going for a minute now. Mysteriously, like I don't even know who's playing. It's a mystery. It's nothing else would make you to believe tonight. That would. I don't know. A guy was preaching and music started playing and there was no one even on stage. It was a miraculous occurrence. Or Kara Diva is in the wings. If you do good, we'll let you actually come out on stage next week. It'll be amazing. I close with this, and we're going to give anybody here a chance to put their faith in Jesus tonight, but we're going to give everybody here a chance to say, I want to be bright. This is, I think, the game-changing reality that has blown my heart up the most about this story, which I love this story. I love a Jesus follower who can win in any moment, at any time, and see people come to know Jesus in the most unlikely places. So Paul, he's in Athens. I just ask quickly, why is he there? How did he get there? No, just quickly, just tell your neighbor really fast. How did he get there? Just tell your neighbor. Cam, just tell your neighbor. Jordan, tell Fran. Just tell your neighbor. Go ahead. How did he get there? What did he say? In a bad boat. How did he get there? By a boat. Okay. How did he get there? We drop into these texts, we do these messages, we're like, yes, and then Paul was in Athens, and blah, 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 and he went up down on Mars Hill, and he's at the Areopagus, and he preached an amazing message, and people got saved. Isn't it amazing? Paul was in Athens. Okay, quick. Paul is in a town called Philippi, telling people about Jesus. He cast a demon out of a slave girl, and her owner had him thrown in jail. He and Silas were put in stocks and beat up in the jail. And at midnight, they cried out, singing praises to God. And God delivered them out of the jail. Oh, they still had whelps on their faces and still had blood coming down the corner of their eye. But they got out of jail that night by the power of God. They left Philippi and went to the next town. They went to Thessalonica, and Paul went straight to the synagogue, started preaching to the Jews there because he knew how to take the scriptures and he knew how to talk to them in their language and lead them to the Messiah, Jesus. It says in Thessalonica that they were so frustrated with Paul because they were so proud of their system that they rounded up, this is amazing, read back, some of the bad characters in town, and they trumped up all this false crud about Paul. And the whole city was incited to riot against Paul, so much so that he had to sneak out of that city in the night. And then he went to Berea. Feeling good so far, right? Everything's going according to plan so far. Got beat up, got put in jail, had to slip out of that town, got delivered in the middle of the night. Jailer got saved, by the way. Went to Thessalonica. People there, they trumped up all this business and the whole city turned on him and he had to slip out of that city in the middle of the night. Went to Berea. Things were going pretty good there. He was teaching in the synagogues and telling his story about Jesus and resurrection. But the people in Thessalonica, ever had people in your life like this? They still weren't over it. They were so mad. When they heard he was in Berea, the same crazy people came from Thessalonica to Berea and stirred up all the people in Berea. So he had to slip out of that town for his life. And the people with him said, you go on ahead to Athens and wait for Silas and Timothy there. Do you see this? Are you seeing this with me? So when he walked into Athens, he didn't go, wow, this looks just like what we paid for in our Expedia.com vacation that we got on a really special rate. Today, we're going to go up to the Acropolis. Tomorrow, we're going to have Greek food. The day after that, we're going to blah, blah, blah. When he walks through the gates of Athens, he is on the run for his life. Not for the first time, not for the second time, not for the third time, not for the fourth time. Everything is going against him everywhere he goes. The headwind comes against his life. But when he rolls into Athens, he doesn't say, God, this isn't really going all that well. God, this isn't the way that I planned it. Hey, woe is me. He walks into Athens and he says, I need to survey the spiritual landscape really quickly here. I don't know how long I'll be here, but if I get an opportunity, I will be ready. I am studying right now. Oh, the unknown God, that is going to come in handy. Trust me, I'm going to probably put the poem with that, and that's going to rock. I don't know who or where. Synagogue, that's where I'm going first, going good in the synagogue. Hey, I'm going to the marketplace because you know what? I want to get both people here. What? You want to promote me up to the Areopagus? Wow, cool. I don't know how I'd get to talk to the Council of Athens, but if you're faithful, being bright on your level, trust me, God will elevate you to some level you never dreamed you were going to be on. Now he's up at the council. He gets an opportunity to preach. He talks about Jesus and resurrection. People get saved, and you know what happens after that? He leaves and goes to Corinth. I didn't plan on going to Athens. I didn't plan on getting to this town. This wasn't like part of the master plan. It was my pain and all the difficulty of my life that put me in this moment right here and right now. But you know what I'm going to do in this moment right here and right now? I'm going to be bright in this moment right here and right now, because what is pain in my life is going to put Jesus in somebody else's life. And I am committed to use my difficulty and pain as a platform for somebody else to hear about Jesus. Can't stop that. Can't stop that. Most of the time when the hardships come, a lot of the times when the hardships come, the followers of the way, we fold. Why is this happening to me? God, where are you? I was just trying to be faithful. This isn't part of the plan. And the city's going to change when the hardship comes and we go, I got to survey the situation really fast here. Got it. Wait for an opportunity whenever it comes. I'm going to go first to my go-to, but I'm going to be ready to go anywhere. I don't expect that God's going to elevate me, and I'll be ready in that moment to trust God, and I'm going to share the story of Jesus. And I'm going to leave the results to him. Some people are going to sneer, and I'm not going to love it, but I'm not going to lose sleep over it either. I'm not going to go home and say, woe is me. I'm just going to say, man, they missed out. And I'm going to focus on the one who said, I'm not sneering. I'm actually saying, yeah, because I've been looking and waiting, because he's not far from each one of us. I read about Dionysus. I wanted to know who he was. I said, who is this guy from the Areopagus? You know what I found about him in the tradition of the church? That he had spent some time in Egypt. You're like, who cares about that? While he was in Egypt was when Jesus died. And when Jesus died, darkness covered the earth on that Friday afternoon. And even in Egypt, all the way down through Palestine, darkness covered the earth. It wasn't just a 10-foot radius around the cross of Jesus Christ. When Jesus took on our sin and shame, heaven darkened the earth. And he was in Egypt, and he knew what had happened, and he had heard some reports about what had happened in Jerusalem, but Dionysius had never been able to put it all together. But just the darkness coming over the earth that day somehow had touched his heart in a really powerful way. He went back to Athens, and he always remembered that day. He always asked people, what do you think happened on that day? Now the news of Jesus is spreading, and people are talking about the Friday and the Saturday and the Sunday and the darkness. And he's like, wait a minute, I experienced that darkness. Tell me what was going on that Friday. And now Paul shows up and preaches about what was going on during that darkness and explains that Jesus was taking on the sins of the world. And Dionysius says, I've been wondering about that my whole life. Wow, I wanted to know what was going on in that moment. And God does what he always does in my life and in your life and in our friend's life. He connects the dots and he ties the stories together and he shows up at the right moment, at the right time, and opens our minds to understand and to see who God is, that he is the one who gave all men life and breath and everything else. Your friends, I believe, and my friends are waiting for someone to help connect the dots. And I believe in time, we're gonna see God do what he always does.
If you were encouraged by today's talk, be sure to rate us and hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you stream your podcast. To experience other talks, videos, and live gatherings, visit us online at PassionCityChurch.com or download the Passion Movement app. And again, thank you for listening to the Passion City Church podcast.